And one law describes a woman who began divorce proceedings because her husband had been wayward and verbally abusive. Once she levied this charge against him, then the authorities of the city would investigate. So already we see a distinction between a husband beginning a divorce and a wife beginning a divorce. The husband simply has to cough up some money and the divorce is final. But a wife has to have outside authorities verify that her charge is correct. If they do find that her account is valid, then she can take her dowry and divorce her husband, returning to her father's house. So she will not get an additional amount of money to support her if she begins the divorce, but she does receive her dowry. Also notice that she is supposed to go right back to her father's house, so she is under the control of some male member of society. When we talked about the widows at Nuzi, who seemed to be so powerful, I noted that they were somewhat unusual. And the laws of Hammurabi and other legal codes also reinforced the idea that women were supposed to be connected to a male authority, either a father or a husband. Laws indicate that men really rarely had to provide a just cause for divorce. Even though divorce is a common theme in the law codes that survive from Mesopotamia, it's hard for us to know how common it was. It's something that concerns kings who want to make sure that property is divided fairly, but we don't have any sense, even from other texts, of how common divorce would be. Inheritance laws also provide insight into family life. If a man has children by his wife and by a slave, according to Hammurabi's law code, and he acknowledges the paternity of the slave's children while he's still alive, the children by both women can inherit equally. If he does not claim the slave's children as his while he's alive, they will not inherit anything. So the issue of paternity must be settled by the father. Family issues could be very complex, and there is a lot of interest in trying to protect family property and trying to prevent lawsuits between different members of the family. As we move from looking at the family to broader issues that Hammurabi was concerned with, we'll see that it's not surprising that a king who was responsible for irrigation canals also ensured that no one damaged them or used them improperly. A negligent farmer who did not maintain his section of a canal, and they would do this by reinforcing the embankment to make sure that the water didn't come over the boundary. If the canal flooded, he had flooded a neighbor's field, the person who had not maintained his part of the canal had to replace the lost grain. Natural disasters are also acknowledged. A flood sent by the rain god Adad, and that resulted in a failed harvest, would earn a debtor a year's reprieve on the interest of a loan. The king also legislated the fees and responsibilities of specific professions. We don't have the entire range of professions by any means, and just to look at a few examples will show how specific these are. Female innkeepers are singled out in two laws of Hammurabi. One required her to accept measures of grain as payment for beer in addition to silver, and another prevents her from allowing criminals to stay in her inn without reporting them to the palace. If she does so, and we don't know if the same punishment will be inflicted if she harbors criminals knowingly or unknowingly, but if criminals are discovered and she has not reported them to the palace, she will be killed. So here we have a focus on female innkeepers, but nowhere do we have male innkeepers in Hammurabi's laws. So we see that there's kind of an unusual perspective on professional life in Mesopotamia. Physicians' fees are established, and there were higher prices for surgery, especially eye surgery, than other aspects of healing. A surgeon could earn 10 shekels of silver for a successful operation on a free person's eye. If the surgery resulted in death or the blindness of a patient, then the surgeon's hand would be cut off. A harsh penalty.